My name is Joy, and I'm an alcoholic. And I just want to say welcome to the newcomers. Glad you're here. And I know what it's like to have less than 30 days, because I was there too, you know, about 2.5 years ago. So just kept coming back. And now I have, you know, almost 3 years. I don't know. So I guess I'll just talk a little bit about what it was like. I always have trouble like remembering drunkalogs. It's so weird. It was like I was blacked out the whole time. So, but I finally remembered one that's not really a drunkalog, but a story that kind of works, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. I was like at a bar, met some random person, and I decided to like go into their van, like red flag number one, because they had tequila. and we just start driving. I'm in like Los Angeles. I don't even live in LA. I live in Oakland, and we're just driving. And I don't even know this person. We're like, yeah, let's just drive up into the mountains. Yeah. And we're like drinking like tequila, mezcal, like as this is happening, like driving a car up further and further into the mountains we go. And it was like pitch black. We're like, yeah, let's look at the moon. And it was just like, so reckless of us. And like, I just feel like when I think about my drinking, like I like remember the story of just like how reckless I was, like driving drunk on a windy road, like not giving, you know, not caring about my life, not caring about like anything. And a part of me kind of thinks I was like really hoping I could have this like, you know, like crazy death experience or something. And like, that was just like the insanity of myself, like in my drinking. And yeah, I was just like super reckless. And it took a lot of coincidences to have me find the rooms of AA. And it was definitely something that like, I didn't know anything about, I didn't know what alcoholism looked like and stuff like that. And also just like another thing for me, like when I was drinking, like I really wanted to control my drinking. And I was just, when we were reading that part just before, it reminded me of the fact that I used to work at a distillery and I used to work at a brewery. And my whole like object of it was like, if I learn everything about alcohol, I will learn how to respect it. And then I can drink it like a normal person. Like, normal people don't think like that. Like, surprise. So that's when I kind of was like realizing maybe there's something bigger going on here, because I want to consume alcohol aggressively. And coincidence after coincidence, such as like hitting on some guy at a bar and him being like, oh, I don't drink. And I was like, how do you not drink? Cause I was trying to quit, but I just couldn't. And like, he basically told me about AA, and I was like, wow, that's fucking crazy. I had no idea. I'm going to go drink some more, like, and then be like an idiot some more. So I finally get into the rooms, and I just like realized that this is where I needed to be. Like, I heard my story, and I heard literally someone say the first day that I was in the rooms at the Late Show, you know, if you wish you could drink like a normal person, you're an alcoholic. And I was like, whoa, that's what I think all the time. Like, and so I definitely knew I was in the right place, and I heard the similarities, and I heard my story from different people. And I saw that there was recovery. And I remember within my first 30 days, like people being like, all right, like here's a chance for newcomers to share. And it was like, my brain like couldn't even like put together like words yet. Like I couldn't even imagine being like, my body hurts. Like, how do you say how it feels inside of you? Like that was like the level of like numbing I had experienced through like, you know, drinking through my 20s. And it took me, you know, coming to the meetings, and I had to go to a lot of meetings before I could even raise my hand to say something. And I, you know, it was just like word vomit, much like this, but a little bit, maybe less structured. And 5 minutes, thank you. And yeah, I was able to, you know, start working the steps with a sponsor. And when working the steps, I noticed that I was experiencing a lot of relief and a lot of healing through the steps. And I learned how to like process, relearn how to process my thoughts, because the way I was thinking in my drinking and how I was thinking like prior to working the steps was like really distorted. And when I started working the steps, I've been able to like rewire how my brain can react to things, because I loved playing the victim. And like before I got into the program, it was like the only thing I believed was my sob story. And then when I got into the program and started working the steps, I started believing in, you know, my higher power. I started believing that like there is, you know, I can trust that like I can like get better. And I started having faith, and I like saw a community forming, and like, you know, like the AA community through fellowshipping. And I stuck around in the rooms. I did service positions like coffee and just like really easy ones, because I was like, I can't be in front of people. Like, so I was doing coffee a lot. I was like really, really into that one. And then now I'm this stuff, I'm like timekeeper, and I've done secretary too. And that's like, it's kept me in the rooms. It's kept me around, and I get to meet people, and then I get to call them and see how they're doing. And we just kind of all hang out, and like, yeah, I feel better. I feel like so much different than I did when I first walked in the rooms. Like I would not have been able to do anything like this. And I definitely have seen like the gifts of the program in my life. And it really does work if you work it. So moral of the story is get a sponsor and do the steps with the sponsor and read the book with them. And then you're going to feel better. And it's like a manual, the big book. And you know how they're always like, read the fucking manual. It's like, it's the same thing with the big book. So I highly suggest sticking around and being a part of this AA community, because we all want to help each other out. We all want to help each other stay sober. And yeah, so thanks so much for letting me share.
All right, good evening, family. My name's Gabe Castillo, and I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. Joy, thanks for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. It was good to see you earlier today at the in-person meeting by the lake. And good to hear you. Good to see how much you've changed from when you came into the rooms. You know, that's one of the benefits of having been here for a few 24 hours is you, like, I'm not often able to see me changing, because it's fucking painfully slow. And it's constant, but it's painfully slow. But I can see it in other people, you know? So again, my name is Gabe Castillo, and I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. It's an honor and privilege to be here with you, Josh. Thank you for asking me to come chair. Kat, thank you for hosting the meeting, secretary. And, you know, welcome to the newcomers. Welcome to the first timer here, Kikla. Nick and I forgot who the other newcomer was, but Nick and Brian. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome home. You know, I hope you find what I've found here, and that's a design for a living that has enabled me to not have to put a drink inside of my body since December 11, 2013. So my sobriety date is December 12th, 2013, and this past December I got 7 years, which is an absolute miracle. You know, I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, as it talks about in this big book. You know, I like to pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. You know, that's where I like to kick it. You know, I dwell there. There's this Dave Chappelle skit with Rick James, right? And the outtakes, it's got, they're interviewing Charlie Murphy, and he's like, you know, Rick, why you always got to take it there? Why you always got to just step over the line habitually? And Rick responds, There's no such place. Darkness. Let's go to the abyss. And like me and my friend, one of my drinking buddies, we used to say that we were the Abyssinians. And we used to just dwell in the abyss. That's where it's nice and comfy and cozy, you know. And it wasn't always like that. You know, I born and raised in East Oakland, large Mexican family. What it meant to be a man was to be around the barbecue at the parties, drinking beer, shooting the shit. And that's what I wanted, right? That's what I wanted to be a part of. You know, my parents were the first to graduate in their families, both from Cal, you know, graduate college. So I was provided for. I went to, you know, Catholic school growing up, and I went to summer camp during the summer for Oakland Parks and Rec, you know, so I can't blame it on not being provided for, right? You know, that's the thing about this alcoholism is that, you know, a lot of people come in with the notion that if you had all these problems, I'd drink too. You see, there's people that have the problem that don't have the problems, and separates us as alcoholics is not the problems. It's the fact that, you know, when I start drinking, I can't stop. And then when I want to stay stopped, I can't stay stopped, you know? You know, my first drink, you know, I waited a long time. I was like 5 or 6 after one of those barbecues helping clean up, right? But my first real drink, you know, my father got sober through Alcoholics Anonymous in 1989, July 7th. You know, he's remained restless, irritable, and discontented on his own. I deadly invite him to meetings when I'm going. He's come to meetings with me. I gave him his 30 chip at a meeting that he's heard me speak at, you know? So that's a blessing, you know, and that really opened the doors for me. I'm 13 and I can't go to the summer camp anymore. So I'm volunteering. So I provide the liquor to the overnight. What happened for me is that before I started drinking, I was getting pats on the back by the camp counselors that I was hanging out with. They're like 17 to 27, whatever. Like, Gabe, you're the man. All right. So the liquor, the effect of the liquor was already hitting me. I felt taller. I felt a part of. I felt welcomed, right? And then I took that drink, and it was salsa, Jornitos, and Hawaiian punch, which I can taste that shit right now. More so than that, and I get goosebumps every time I describe it, I can feel what it did for me. Because it hit me in the stomach and shot out to every fiber in my being. And that thing that separates me bodily and mentally from my fellows, that makes me an alcoholic, happened. And I took that deep breath, my shoulders went down, right? And like, that was the first deep breath I think I ever took in my life. It wasn't, but like, that's what it felt like. And so, you know, I chased that exact feeling for the next 20 years in the face of all this evidence that I kept racking up in my life that it was insane for me to drink. You know, I proceeded to pass out, you know, or proceeded to throw up, black out, pass out, and then I wanted to do it every chance I got, right? You know, through high school, it was periodic because it's harder to get liquor than it is to get, you know, its cousins. You know, my experience with alcohol is it led me to consume copious amounts of drugs and use relationships and use food and use the pursuit of money, property, and prestige to try to fix what was going on inside of me. You know, I'm going to talk about alcohol and its cousins as well. You know, I worked for the City of Oakland Parks and Rec for about 10 years. I was the director of the after-school program and the summer camp and coached flag football and basketball. And I remember some mornings going to the summer camp, and there's this one kid that looked at me one day. He just looked at me. He's like, and they called me Bear, out there. That was my camp name. And they were like, Bear. He said, you smell like my daddy. And I was like, oh, shit. I need to go take a bird bath. You know, I working with kids doesn't pay what it should. So I started working in the nightclubs in San Francisco, working security. And so, you know, quickly became the head of security of a bunch of nightclubs that don't even exist anymore. And which was great for a burgeoning alcoholic like me. I You know, I had everything at my, you know, and I said, my name's Gabe. I'm head of security. Can I buy you guys some shots? And then, you know, I knew all the people that were in there dealing drugs. So it was amazing, right? You know, I got a job I moved out to Brentwood, across county for the first time in 2007 or 2006. You know, the commute was just killing me. So I got a job at John Muir Medical Center in Walnut Creek, quickly became the head of security there. You know, back in the year 2000, I'd gotten wet reckless because I blew a .04 and I got pulled over for a DUI. I was under 21. And in January of 2010, you know, in 2009, again, 2009, the company that I was working for flew me out to Denver for a management conference and a leadership conference and a training conference. They were trying to fast track me through the company. And in January of 2010, February of 2010, I was... at the beginning of February 2010, I was hanging out with some of the people from the ER, and I drove home, and I drove my friend's truck home, and got to her house with you know, and her husband started arguing, and so I wanted to go home, so I drove home and pulled into my driveway, and I walked up to my door. I was like, no, I'm not going to want to move the car. I'm going to be too hungover. Get in the truck, and go pull a U-turn, and I get blurped when I stop and pull the U-turn. I blew a .28, which was three times the legal limit, but I was in and out in 45 minutes because I was talking to the officer. Again, normal people, they blow a .28. They're not going to be talking. They're not going to be awake, but alcohol affects us differently. So in and out in 45 minutes, I lost the job because, you know, I lost my license in order to work there, to work security for that company, you had to have a license. I got a job that paid me like $20,000 more, and I had double the amount of officers. I was the assistant director of security for the Bank of America building in San Francisco. That was May of 2010. And in August of 2010, I'm sitting at my desk, which is at the B of A building on the mezzanine floor in my office. And I can't stay awake. I don't know what's happening. My leg swells up. So I go back to John Muir, and I go to the ER, and I walk in. I have a blood sugar of 597. What I know is I advanced the onset of diabetes. That's a walking diabetic coma, pretty much. And I advanced the onset of diabetes through my alcoholism, my drug use, and my lack of self-care. And, I, like any good alcoholic, I quit for 2 weeks because that made sense, right? And I was living in the marina. I was making money hand over foot. I worked in a lot of the bars in the marina, so I couldn't pay for a drink. I was a 2 minute walk from the dry dock, yet I was so far away from being ready for that. About a month later, I was hungover one morning and I lost the keys to the building, the master keys. And it's kind of hard to secure the building when you don't have keys, and it costs about $100,000 to rekey that building. So they allowed me to resign as well. You know, I couldn't hold a job for the next few years or in any like managerial position. I was just working as a security guard. And, in August of 2012, I'm not just a alcoholic, I'm a retired mathematician. So, you know, I like to get further in whatever ways you can give me. And I got in a cut underneath my toe that got gangrenous. So I hobbled into Kaiser Oakland and was in there 15 days, 45 days in K-PAC, took two of my toes and half my foot. They had talked about doing a baloney amputation, but they didn't do that. I'm not as tall as I used to be. I'm about a half a foot short. I live my life with one foot in the grave. I only got half that bitch out, right? I told my cousin that, and he's a normie, and he went, oh, right? He made this just horrific sound. And like, you guys get it. You guys are laughing. But we're not normal people. And I am in K-PAC and I go to a wedding. I'm in a wheelchair and I'm drinking. This is how insane it is, right? So I already told you that my sobriety date is December 12th, 2013. This is August of 2012. And for a year and a half, despite the visual and physical reminder of what drinking and drugging does for me, I could not or would not see a different way of life. I made an ass of myself that New Year's, and I sobered up for the next 6 months of 2013, the first 6 months. I um, my hostage at the time told me she was going to leave if I didn't, if I didn't change. And she recommended that I go to a meeting and find you guys. And I looked at East Bay Intergroup and I saw, the first thing I saw was a big book study. And I was like, hell no, you're not going to tell me nothing about the Bible. I went to Catholic school. I was raised, Catholic my whole life. And what's funny is that in the chapter, We Agnostics, it mentions seven times prejudice. Mentions the word prejudice seven times. What I know that to be is my judgment about something I think I know that doesn't necessarily happen to be real. And that kept me out. That kept me out. So I was dry for 6 months, crispy dry, just upsettingly dry, just nauseatingly to myself and those around me dry. It's uncomfortable for me, so it's uncomfortable for everyone. And I got back on my, I got back to drinking in June of 2013. I went on my last run. And, I was, by the time mid-September hit, I was hobbling from liquor store to liquor store, actively seeking out oblivion. I was drinking a Golden Gorilla, which is a brass monkey on steroids, which is basically, high gravity Old English, orange juice, and Seagram's gin all mixed up together in a big one of these A's cups. And I'd have to pound that to pass out off of the other substances that I was using. And I was hobbling to one of the liquor store one day, and I'd go to a different liquor store so they wouldn't know I was a drunk. They knew. And I stepped wrong, and I felt a crack in my foot, and it went all the way up to my spine. And for 15 days, I was hobbling to liquor store to liquor store, and I couldn't walk anymore. And on August, beginning of October, I went in for surgery on my foot. I'd shattered a bone in my foot. In my little half foot. And so, I was living at that place that it talks about in A Vision for You, the jumping off place where I desperately wanted to quit drinking, but I absolutely could not and was terrified to. It was my sense of ease and comfort. It was the only thing that made me feel, it wasn't even making me feel good anymore. It just made me feel okay. It allowed me to breathe. Right. And I was surrounded by the four hideous horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. And I wished for death every day. I was trying to kill myself, but not really. I was just doing suicide on the installment plan, which is what drinking and drugging is for me. And on the night of December 11th, nothing crazy, nothing amazing, nothing tragic happened. It was just the end of a really long road. I was done. And I got down on my knees and I prayed to God and God that I didn't want anything to do with, that I didn't understand, but I needed some help, and I surrendered. And I sobered up for the next few days, and I went to the hospital. I went to Highland, and I was in the waiting room for 5.5 hours. And I left Highland, and I went to Kaiser, and I was 16.5 hours. And the doctor told me that had I not stopped what I was doing when I was doing it, I very well could have died. My kidneys were starting to fail. I was gray and yellow, and I was 189 pounds. I'm a big dude. I really don't have any business being 189 pounds. And I went to my first meeting, which was Friday night Hillside Prez on December 20th, 2013. You guys were like freakishly happy and welcoming. And that kind of bugged me out for two reasons. One, like, what is wrong with you guys being so happy? And two, it was like, you guys were happy and sober, right? And I could never get those two to meet, And the other thing was that you guys were warm and welcoming and wanted me there. And I hadn't felt that warmth, and I hadn't been welcomed anywhere in a while. I hadn't been wanted anywhere in a while. So the principle of attraction rather than promotion really, really hit me in the face. I started working the steps with my friend who showed me the rooms, and we got up to step 9 real fast. I hit bottom in Oakland, and I moved out to Brentwood, to move with my family. And I started going to the ECCFH, the East Contra Costa County Fellowship Hall. And there's an 8:30 a.m. meeting 7 days a week. That's a literature study. They do a big book study. They do a step study. They do a tradition study out of the 12 and 12 and AA Comes of Age, As Bill Sees It, and Daily Reflections Twice. And what I really got was a tutelage in our society, in who we are, and how we do it, and why we do it that way. And what these guys on Ye Old Bench of Wisdom showed me through their demonstration was what it meant to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. They told me, sit down, kid, shut up, you're going to be okay. And I needed that because I was excited, because for the first time in a long time, I didn't want to die. And they said, if I wanted to keep what I had to give it away. And they quickly got me into service. I was a coffee maker and I was secretary in 3 meetings by the end of the month. And, you know, and they really wanted me to get in it. And, you know, they told me that there's nobody that's too dumb for this program, but there's a shitload of people that are too smart for it. And Gabe, you could end up in that latter category if you're not careful, you know? So I was working with my first sponsor and, you know, we got to step 9 pretty fast. And, you know, I was learning that I needed more. What the book says is our hope is not just the maintenance, but the growth of a spiritual experience, right? So, you know, nothing against my first sponsor. He's one of my best friends today. I love that man. He helped save my life, but I needed something different. So I went to RMS to a book study at Rehab Management Services in Concord. And what I heard was a man by the name of Ronnie Johnson who shared his experience with the framework of the Big Book. And that's exactly what I wanted. He was sponsored by a man by the name of Don Brown, who's since passed away, who was sponsored by a man by the name of Happy Jack, who's passed away also. And those names might not mean anything to you, but they mean absolutely everything to me. Because at some point, Roland carried the message to Ebby. Ebby carried the message to Bill. Bill carried the message to Bob. And they both took it to AA number 3, Bill Dotson. And it made it all the way to me. You see, that's how this thing works. One alcoholic talking to another. Matter of fact, 187 times from the front cover to page 88, it mentions working with others. So, you know, what happened is Ronnie came over to my house and he gave me 5 rules that Don gave him, that Happy Jack gave him. And rule number 1 is never talk down to an alcoholic. It's on page 95. From any moral or spiritual hilltop, it is and always will be an alcoholic that's saving my life. Whether that's, you know, a sponsor, a sponsee, just a friend in the program that I'm talking to, I need you to change my perspective on me. You know, and if at any point I'm condescending to you, and you know, later on down the road, you need some of the hope that I have to give. Oh, Gabe, no, he was an asshole. Then why would you come to me? And basically what I've done is I've cut off my own lifeline. Rule number 2 is if you can think it, don't do it. Roman numeral 28 says, you have the mind of an insane mind, right? Cannot differentiate the true from the false. While he admits is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. So all these grand ideas, because I am grandiose and impetuous by nature, I'm taught to run them by my sponsor and trusted friends. Not that they are the be all and end all, but they can give me a different perspective. And usually by the time those grandiose ideas come out of my mouth, I'm like, oh, that sounds really stupid. Rule number 3 is if we're going to take steps 4 through 9, you're not willing to take another alcoholic through 4 through 9, and then get the hell out of my house right now. Again, over and over and over in that book, it tells me that you know, and page 89, the one of the greatest promises in this book says that practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics as works when other activities fail. Rule number 4, you will know this book and it's my job to teach it to you, because there's going to be a point where you can't get to a meeting, you can't reach your sponsor, you can't reach another alcoholic. The only way to recall the guidance in this book that gets you back to a God of your understanding will save your life. And rule number 5 has have fun. Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, and it's vastly more than that. It's a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find freedom from care, boredom, and worry. The greatest years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. He said, can you get down with that? I said, yeah, I can agree to that. And you know, we talked about, for a good half hour, talked about me, and we talked about him. And what he did in that half hour is he basically used the evidence of my life to convict me of my insanity. He said, all of this stuff in your life that you've done, the county jail that you did, the losing of the jobs, the losing half your foot, advancing the onset of diabetes, all that sort of stuff is the unmanageability in your life. And the fact that you continue to pick up in the face of this evidence in your life that it's insane for you to drink is your powerlessness. So can you agree that it's insane for you to pick up a drink in considering what we've talked about? And I was like, yeah. So he really parlayed step 2 into step 1, you know, and the principle behind step 1 is honesty.
honestly, I can't do this. Step two, he asked me, do you have a God? And I was like, I approached God with an expletive because I didn't want anything to do with God. In hindsight, what I know now is that I was afraid of not being worthy of God's love and grace. I don't understand God. I don't know what God is, but I get to experience God when I'm helping you. You know, but he said, he took that away from me. He said, came to believe that this process can restore me to sanity, can restore you to sanity. I was like, I can get down, because he told me enough about himself that I knew that he was absolutely crazy. So, you know, I saw that it was working for him because he seemed relatively sane. And he made a decision. Can you make a decision to turn your will being your thinking and your life being your actions over to the care of this process and do steps 4 through 9? Right. I said, yeah, I can do that. Right. And what I know now in hindsight is that it doesn't matter what I think about it. Doesn't matter what I feel. Doesn't matter what I believe. What matters is that if I take the actions prescribed in this big book, this one here, and Ronnie told me is that, the more beat up your big book is, the less your life will be. But if I take the actions prescribed in this big book, you know, I'll experience an effect. And if I know anything about myself and what was proven to me about my drinking and using is that I drink for effect, right? And in hindsight, I can see that, you know, and really the linchpin is doing steps 4 through 9. There's no action in 1, 2, and 3. It's just a conversation. Nowhere does it say put pen to paper till it says get to step 4, right? And when it says that, what's funny is that, you know, when I heard Don speak a few months before he passed away a few years ago, you know, he gave me the best synopsis of 3 ever. It was like, God save me for me and I'll serve you. Hell. Hell. Right? The action of the decision in 3 is to do steps 4 through 9. Right. So I was actually working with a new guy the other day, and, you know, he's like, trouble turning, you know, I'm turning my will and my life over. I said, do you know how you do that? You just do steps 4 through 9. You just continue with the action. That's how I turn my will and my life over. I continue to live by these principles. Right. You know, in step 4, I was writing step 4 in 45 minutes after a 45 minute conversation with Ryan. Don't waste time. What's funny is that in the book, we say the third step prayer and it says we should think well before doing this after we do it. But there's no amen after the third step prayer. There's not only directions in this book on what to do. There's also directions on the manner with which we should do them. Because then it says next, which means immediately after we launched, which means I'm taking off on a course of vigorous action. The first step of which is a personal house clean that we've never really attempted. I'm paraphrasing it, right? Earlier in the book, I believe, and it's in There's a Solution, it says, we in our turn sought this same escape with the desperation of drowning men. How many of you are going to try to just easy does it out of the water if you're drowning? I don't think any of you. I think I'm trying to get out of that water as fast as I can. So we take a look at my resentments, my fears, and my harms done, including my sexual inventory. And I take a look at my social instinct, my personal relationships, and my self-esteem, my security instinct, my emotional and my material security, and my sexual instinct, and how those were affected. And then I resolutely take a look at, you know, what my mistakes were. Where was I selfish, self-seeking, inconsiderate, dishonest, and driven by fear? You know, the 12 and 12 is a beautiful companion to this book. And it says that you know, fear is the chief activator of my character defects. Fear of not getting something I want or losing something I have. Yet I move so quick past fear into resentment. And then I strike out and cause harm that I don't even recognize the fear. You know, and it's beautiful in the fear section that why do I have this fear? Because I've been working off self-reliance. And at some point, I fail myself. I have limited power, so I have to find new unlimited power to tap into. And the process of going through these inventories is to get unblocked from this sunlight of the spirit, that which is already there. It's a beautiful way that Bill describes a power greater than myself when we agnostics, because he goes, creative intelligence, spirit of the universe, creator, you know, vital sixth sense, unsuspected inner resource, higher power, sunlight of the spirit. So what I'm doing is getting them blocked. You know, and the spiritual principle behind four is courage. Five is integrity, because I'm sharing it before, you know, God and you know, in front of to another human being. And in six, the willingness is, am I willing to continue along this path? Having seen how I behave, trying to satisfy my own instincts, running on self-will, willing to continue along this path. You know, it's not easy to look at myself and what I do, because I'm a glutton, man. It's too much, too fast, never enough, and not the right kind. And I'm perpetually dissatisfied and perpetually butthurt because things don't turn out my way or the way I'm scheming for them to turn out, right? Am I still willing to continue on this path? And in seven, humbly ask him to remove my shortcomings. But the prayer says, God, have all of me, the good and the bad. I'm not qualified to pick out which defects of character for God to remove. And in God's hands, my defects can become assets. My stubbornness could be used as determination to help another drunk. You know, in eight, you know, the brotherly love, this is what I owe these people. I already have a list in four. I just move it into four columns right now. Financial, deferred, and no contact. You know, I go to people, neither servile nor scraping. I look them in the eye and I say, I've harmed you mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, financially. Here's how I see I've harmed you. Is there anything that I left out? And is there any way that you can forgive me? And I've gotten gay. We love you. We're glad you're back. I've gotten gay. Cool girl later. I've gotten Gabe, get the hell out of my house right now. And I've gotten people that don't want to see me. And to each, I say, okay. And if at any point when God sees fit to put those people that haven't wanted to see me in front of me, I would be happy to make those amends. When I was freed through a process of 4 through 9. You know, in the 10th step, it says our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. You know, understanding that I'm still driven by fear if I'm not walking in faith. And at any given moment, I'm agitated. My baseline is agitated and doubtful. So I have to constantly pause throughout my day, ask for guidance and direction through prayer and meditation, and ask him what type of man, what type of son, what type of brother, what type of uncle, what type of employee would you have me be? I see it. Thank you. And then I ask for the power to carry that out. Right? And how do I carry it out? In practicing these principles in all my affairs and carrying this message to other alcoholics. Sponsoring has been the biggest privilege of my life. I picked up, I spoke at the Alano Club here in Marin on Wednesday, and I, you know, it's a guy with 21 days came up to me afterwards. He didn't have a sponsor. He's been trying this for years. And I came back here to my house and we got to work, and he left with his four step already starting, having started written it 2.5 hours. Yet in that 2.5 hours, I watched him as he came in. If you're sitting there, see what happens psychologically, we experience physiologically. So he walked into my house and he was all down like this. And as we were talking about what this process does and how it can work and the way I have applied it to my life and what I did and how it's transformed me, because I'm not telling him what to do. What the hell do I look like advising somebody? Have you seen what I've done with my life? Not pretty. But what I can do is I can tell you what I did in this program by following these steps and what it has done for me. And he lit up and he sat up and he walked out different than when he walked in. That's the juice, man. That's the gold. That's that connection to God and to others that I've always wanted, that I sought in these things, these five, the big five, right? Alcohol, drugs, sex, food, and money. And I would never suffice it. I have been able to find a way that makes it filling and long lasting in this program. What I really have, I introduce myself by my first and my last name because I want you to find me. I'm not meant to be anonymous in an anonymous program. I'll give you my phone number, you know, 510-390-2820. It's being recorded. Call me. I don't care, because I want to make myself available to you. You know, I introduce myself as a recovered alcoholic because it says so 16 times in this here big book. Because I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, but I haven't always been sober in these 7 years. You know, I got everything I thought I wanted in year five. I had the girl on AA campus. I had a good job. I started a company, sold a company, shiny car. I had a legion of sponsees. I was doing a big book study in my house every Sunday, and I thought I'd made it, right? And I put my reliance on all these things, and I was working 90 hours a week, and I worked myself into some health issues. I wasn't eating or taking care of my diabetes. I got up to 300 pounds, and my kidneys started failing. I threw the relationship away. And you know, this was like January of 2020, and I hit a bottom emotionally where I wanted to drink and I wanted to die again. And what happened for me is I got down on my knees and I was sobbing, and I asked God to remove it, to take this obsession away. And God showed up in the friend in the name in the God showed up as my friend Jonathan, another one of our members, asking me what I was doing. And I told him what I was doing. I was on my knees, you know, asking God to remove this. And I said, I'm going to go to the In-Between Fellowship. And I went to the In-Between. My friend Mac was sharing, and Mac calls on me first after he speaks. So I'm like, okay. So I got honest, and the old timers came up to me after, and they shared their experience of what they'd gone through at year six. My ex called me while we were sitting there, while I was talking to the old timers. She was having a bad day, and she came over, and I was able to make amends to her. We reconciled, and we ended up moving up to Portland in August, you know, and around December, it started to get tough, you know, I did some inventory at the end of December, and I read it to Jonathan, and, you know, I had been sponsored by a man by the name of John Fitzsimmons for the, you know, from the beginning of 2020 through when he passed away. And, you know, Jonathan was there for me in the interim, and I read inventory with him, and you know, I was at peace with what was happening, what was coming. And, you know, we ended up ending the relationship, and I moved back here to the Bay Area from Portland, you know, with I thought nothing. You know, what it felt like was my world was falling apart. I'm 40 years old. I have nowhere to live. I'd gotten rid of most of my stuff when I moved up there. And what happened is I dove into this program, and I was going to a bunch of meetings. And, you know, since moving back, I've spoken 40 times at meetings. I'm sick of my own BS. But at the same time, I'm like, okay, I points and I go. Because it's been proven to me over and over again, that third step, that, you know, he provides what I need just so long as I stick close to him, perform his work. You know, I reached out to a friend that I'd been working with, that I started in security with, and he gave me a job working 40 hours a week once I got back, you know, released, because I had shoulder surgery in December. And I was going to move into a place in Oakland, but one of the guys that I was going to move in with, he parties, and it's not that he parties. I work in nightclubs, or worked in nightclubs. It doesn't bother me, but he just hangs out with whoever. And that's not safe for a person with me, with all the underlying conditions. So I'm at my second day of work, and my boss comes, my buddy comes, and he's, you know, I'm telling him what's going on with me. And he, you know, was like, oh, well, I have a 3-bedroom townhouse in Sausalito that's vacant. How about I rent it to you for cheaper than what you were going to rent in Oakland? And, you know, a few days out of the month when we have a project and somebody needs to stay, they can stay in the downstairs bedroom. You have the two upstairs bedroom and the main floor basically to yourself. You know, I'm not going to say that you get the prizes by doing this. That's, you know, that would be, But like the evidence in my life that I get taken care of has been there, that I do what I think you would have me, and I get I'm carried. And what this has opened me up to is that I can see that throughout my entire life, in spite of me, I have been carried by this power greater than myself. And the guy who came in here with an expletive before God can tell you honestly that the greatest thing that I have in my life today is this relationship with this power that I don't understand, but I get to experience when I'm working with you, when I'm loving on you. Me, God, and you, there's nobody else to play with, right? 4 and 5 is me, 6 and 7 is God, 8 and 9 is you. 10 is me, 11 is God, 12 is you. Know, I heard that in a pitch by a man by the name of Earl Hightower. And I actually got to go. I hang out with these guys who do a bunch of service, this group, the adventure group people down in San Jose, the Thumpers group, and they take a 4-step workshop in the Soledad every year. And I actually got to go with one of my heroes in AA, do a four-step workshop in a prison for a weekend, where inside that prison, inside that gymnasium, these men in confinement are freer than a lot of people that I see out here in the world today. I don't know what I did to deserve this. What I can tell you is that everything that I've been through, I do not regret my past. I do not wish to shut the door on it. I use it as fuel to help another alcoholic. Cling to the fact that in God's hands, the darkest crannies of our past can be used to help others. It can help avert death and misery for them. Follow the dictates of a higher power and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. So that means no matter what's going on out here, I can walk through it with a modicum of grace and dignity if I choose to rely on God and help his kids. So what I'd like to, you know, in summation, what I'd like to share with you newcomers, you know, is I hope you're in a little bit of pain. I hope you're hurting, because it's been my experience that pain is the great motivator. Pain gives me that gift of desperation. I don't learn through constant, but through suggestion and example. It's always been consequences and boundaries. But if you can learn through my suggestion, it'd be get a sponsor, work these steps, go help someone else work these steps. That's the point of this, to get hooked up with a higher power and then go take this to someone else so they can get hooked up with a higher power in perpetuity. Because the best place to be is sandwiched between a sponsor and a sponsee. That's the sweet spot here. You know, if you'd have told me that I was looking for God in a bottle, I'd have looked at you like you were crazy. But if you'd have told me that I was looking for peace in that bottle, I could have understood that, because all I ever wanted was for this to shut up and for this to sit still. You see, I'm restless of the body, irritable of the mind, and discontented of the spirit, unless I can again feel the sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks. But with the anesthetic of a spiritual solution, I've been able to get comfortable with my own skin and find ways to be useful to the world around me. And I've never once wanted a drink when I felt useful. I'll close with this little poem I like to close with. And again, thank you all for allowing me to share tonight and be a part of my own recovery. You know, I sought my soul I couldn't see. I sought my God eluded me. I sought my brother and I found all three. Me, God, and you, baby. Three sides of that triangle. Nobody else to play with. Love you all.